Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me for this podcast is a 20-year-old entrepreneur that impressed the hell out of me. Nick Hamburger is his name. Ironically, I don't know if this is like inappropriate. He's in the food business and his name's Hamburger. I thought that was interesting and funny. But smart kid, really well connected. Talk about having the right neighbors. Skinny Pop founder is neighbor, Lefkowski from Groupon, Tempus, 15 other public companies is his neighbor. So the kids had access to a lot of support. So I give credit to those around him, but also a lot of credit to Nick. Building an egg white chip, like, I don't even know how a person would have thought of this, but it's brilliant. If you've ever cooked fried an egg, there's the crispy parts around the egg white and they're delicious. And you're like, I'm the idiot who's like burning my finger trying to like tap dance through the pan to pick up these little crispies, crunchies to bite on them and eat them. He actually figured out a way to turn those into potato chips. Well, they're not potato chips, they're egg chips. And they're delicious. And he's got some kick-ass branding. So this kid shows up and pitches at Future Founders, which I've mentored at for several years. And I fought for him in the corner because people were like, oh man, this is cool, this is cool. I was like, no, this is legit. This is going to be something big. This reminds me of Peter Rahal from RX Bar, among others. Tiesta T, Patrick Tenue, some other players in Chicago that have had success. He wins that. He wins University of Chicago's Venture Challenge, takes 50K, does the Craft Accelerator, succeeds there. Product is in Freshies here in Chicago. Limitless Coffee with Matt Matros. And you'll see him everywhere, I think. Quavos.com. But 20 years old. And when you listen to this, you're going to be shocked I just turned 21 years old. But 18 when he comes up with this, 20 when he pitches in front of me. And when you listen to this podcast, you're going to be blown away just at like how grounded and understanding of the business he is. And he's running a Kickstarter campaign, which goes live today. So boom, there you go. Day one. Go to the website, Quavos.com. Go to Kickstarter. Look up Quavos. You can buy like 150 bags of chips if you're so inclined. So I recommend that. Anyway, before I have a conversation with my good friend here, Nick, we got to go to the Startup Inbox, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. We use ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up at ActiveCampaign.com/Technori. You get your first 2 months for free. Carl Franks, my company offers a suite of marketing solutions, but sometimes it seems like our prospective clients are turned off by the one-size-fits-all pitch versus focusing on one specific niche. How do I narrow the scope of what I'm selling to get the clients to buy in? Well, Carl, this is what I'm thinking. The judgment on a good sales pitch is as simple as who spoke for the least amount of time. A successful sales pitch is where the salesman has to say very little. The person who you're selling to tells you what they need. They tell you their problems. You ask the right questions. So you're not sitting there going, oh, we can do anything. I can build everything. I'm the master of everything. I just tell you that we work with companies to solve whatever vague need that it is. So like tech or marketing or blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to assume that they knew this about me. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the meeting. So they already know the industry line I'm in. And the pitch comes from there. The pitch is, tell me about your business so that I can understand how I can help you with what our resources are. And you say to me, this is my business. This is where we make our money. This is the problem I'm having. And then I ask you a couple more questions and you go on a little more. You need to not tell people a broad solution as much as you need to ask for as much, the right questions to get as much information as you possibly can so you can turn around and tell them exactly what you're going to do with your resources to help them. That's my recommendation. Don't spend time pitching everything. Just ask them what they need and look at what you have and sell them the version of what you have that they need. And the rest of the time shouldn't be you talking. It should be them reflecting on what you put in front of them and having them talk themselves into it. And the last thing I will tell you, last piece of advice, words of wisdom from many, 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 many sales experiences, as well as other people who have failed miserably with this. Do not sell people shit they don't need. It never goes well. They will not come back to you. The best customers come to you for the rest of your life because they know that you never sold them shit they didn't need. You only put them in front of stuff that they needed. So if you don't, if they tell you the problem and you don't find a solution that you can help with or bring real value, tell them that. Their trust is worth a hell of a lot more than a short-term sale. On to what I think is a really, really good podcast for any young entrepreneur. I am not a young, I mean, I'm young enough. I'm going to be 35 in May. I'm young enough. I feel like I'm still hip. I'm with it. Maybe not. Rachel just shook her head. No, I'm not. But Nick is 20 going on, just turned 21. And I just am super impressed by it. So this is Nick Hamburger, the founder, co-founder, and CEO of Quavos. You were on my show and there's no Quavos chips. What the fuck is this?
So we 3 weeks ago we sold out online. So we're stocking back up and we'll have them for you in a few weeks.
That's acceptable. It's acceptable. It's actually really funny that you bring this up because I've never thought of it this way. We have a lot of people who come on the show. I love them all. Like Chomps, we've had on the show. They bring Chomps. Farmer's Fridge, we just had on last week. They bring Farmer's Fridge. All these people bring food and stuff. It's actually really a good thing if you're, I mean, it's not a good thing to be sold out when you're still being like making it, but the number of people who like, it never dawned on me that they have a lot of product and that they should be selling it, not giving it away.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're not selling enough.
That's what I'm saying. So are you guys on Kickstarter now or what's the deal?
So yeah, we're launching Kickstarter next Thursday, April 4th.
Okay.
At noon Central Time.
All right.
Very excited for that, and yeah, we're expecting big things, hoping to get $10,000 raised publicly, but internally we're hoping for a bit more than that.
Yeah, I suspect so. I think that $10,000 ought to be probably by the end of the afternoon is probably where we'll be on that.
Ideally.
So we obviously, I know you, and you were Future Founders winner. You've been part of the Craft Accelerator, right? Or you just get into it?
We did it this past summer.
Did it this past summer. Yeah. Chicago, University of Chicago also gave you a bunch of money too?
Yep, they did.
So a lot of people are backing you and believe in what you're doing, myself included.
Thank you.
What the hell is a Quavos chip?
So a Quavo, we haven't officially determined the singular or the plural, but yeah. I say it's a Quavo for one and Quavos for multiple.
Okay, so it's a
multiple.
Quavo for one, but if you crack the bag open and eat Quavos, that's multiple.
Past the Quavos,
that's Spanglish.
One Quavo. Yeah.
So it's Spanglish.
Quavos is it comes from basically a combination of the word quick and huevos. So it's Spanglish for quick huevos, eggs on the go, quick eggs. They're chips made from egg whites, so they're super high protein, lower carb than most chips, and basically just a healthier alternative to your conventional salty snack.
And I have to ask, of course, I know the end of this story, but why and how egg chips? I don't get it. I do get it, but I didn't get it.
Yeah. So my co-founder, Zach, is type 1 diabetic.
Okay.
And so he would cook eggs a lot because they're low carb, and he can have carbs. It's just every time he does, he has to do an insulin injection. So for snacks, he'd like to go low carb, avoid doing that shot. And he would cook eggs all the time. And he was making an omelet. And we were eating kind of the crispy refuse, like those little bits left over in the pan. And we're like, hey, these are crunchy. They're salty. They're kind of like chips, but they're made from egg whites instead of potatoes or tortillas. So like right away, we saw the health potential for making a chip out of egg whites. And we started dabbling, seeing what we could do. We got some advice early on from my neighbor who founded Skinny Pop.
Yeah.
So he was super helpful at the beginning, kind of getting us focused on...
It's a good neighbor. You have a good neighborhood, actually. I know this story. You've got you've got manufacturing, distribution, digital marketing, representation. You've got it all. You're right down the courtyard.
We're in a good place. Yeah. Just kind of... We did some dabbling with it, but it took a long time to actually make a shelf-stable... tasty snack.
How do you make it?
Yeah.
Like, how do you make the? I mean, you obviously can't.
Yeah, can't go into the specifics, but
Let me do this.
Yeah.
Rather than that, because I know the answer is you can't.
Yeah.
Tell me this. When you're dabbling, when you first came onto this, how did you replicate in enough quantity to test the egg crispy part? Because I have another follow up question after that. So, like, how did you just get? Did you just have to eat a shit ton of eggs? Like, how did you get to the point where you were able to just master the crispy part of the egg?
Well, I mean, so like pretty early on, we stopped using a skillet and frying them up. Yeah. You know, we went to other methods that, you know, could be replicated a bit more.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
So like, in your like in the kitchen, just in your parents' house
for a little bit, and then eventually got to a process that isn't available in your typical home kitchen.
No, but so I don't mean for the product. I mean as you're like you and your co-founder are just like figuring this out. I mean, like the second and third time you did this.
Yeah. We started in my kitchen in Glencoe, just playing around, doing different things, trying everything that is available in a kitchen, all sorts of different ingredients in the pantry.
Yep.
Then eventually got to a point where we went to a pilot lab to do most of the development because we didn't have the equipment at home. But just a process of immense trial and error over many months.
My next question that comes as a result of the first one is, I explained this to a couple people on my team, and they were like, egg crispy, like, what? Why would that? What is that? Like, why would I eat? What am I eating?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I was dumbfounded because you told me, I heard the pitch at Future Founders, and I talked to you at the cameo party and got a chance to learn more about it. And it took me a millisecond to know what you were talking about. I absolutely remember every time we've ever made eggs in the house that I always would go back with my finger and lick the tip of it so I didn't burn my finger and then dab all around the plate so that I could get the little crispy things.
Yep.
And it hit me that there are human beings out there that don't know about the hidden deliciousness of the egg crispy.
Yeah.
Like, how do you market? Who do you market to? How do you get these people to understand this?
Most people, a lot of people I tell the story to, not all, but a good portion actually say, that's my favorite part of the omelet too. So
that's what I'm saying. John over here shaking his head. He's like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I think people on your team need to cook more.
That's what I'm saying. You don't eat. Do you eat enough eggs, John? That's the question. I don't, clearly not. Okay. So let's talk more about like your sort of entrepreneurial journey here, because are you still 20?
I just turned 21.
Congratulations.
A couple weeks ago.
Thank you. Congratulations. Yep. You're too busy to go out and party, so that's, you know, that's a good thing, I guess.
Yep, no.
I wish I had a business that I was doing at that time, because life would have been probably a little different.
Perhaps.
Very much perhaps. I love the marketing. I love the packaging. I said this to you when you pitched. You have a great stable of mentors and people around you. So I give credit to you, but I also, of course, give credit to the tribe behind you. But you have built something, and I see you sitting here right now in front of me with the small egg gold hollow on the shirt, and I'm like, it's so Silicon Valley, and I mean that in a respectful manner. I love the way that you have gone about this, and I say that. Looking at the number of companies that we see through Chicago. And I was talking about this on the last show, and I talked about this with Luke Saunders from Farmers Fridge. There's like, how do you put this? There's this certain thing that I can't put into words. When you see a founder or you see an idea plus a founder that you're like, that's different. And I wouldn't even put it, if your deck came across my table, I wouldn't have, like Luke and like Steven with Cameo and a few others, these are guys who pitched to me before they even had a deck. So I got to actually see this before they were who they are now.
Mm-hmm.
I would never have even put them in the same caliber as the rest of the applications. There's something about the way it's put together. And I want to congratulate you. You haven't achieved shit yet, but you've done all of the things that look that are right. You've set yourself up for a lot of success.
Well, I appreciate that. We'll see what happens. I mean, certainly so far it has gone smoothly as it could, I think. And we're hoping for good things, but we'll have to see.
So let's talk about how you got to this point. I mean, you get the idea, you go test it, you've got some support around you, which is helpful, but like, how do you start mapping this out? How do you start recognizing how I'm going to take this to market and who's my customer and do they like this? Will they even buy it? Will they eat it? You're 20. You're an 18 at the time, probably.
Yeah. So we did two summers, the summer after high school and the summer after freshman year of college, of just dabbling with the recipe, nothing too crazy. It got serious a little over a year ago with the New Venture Challenge at UChicago. So that was a 10-week course at UChicago at the Booth Business School, where we just kind of
walked. Were you a student
through.
There at the time? Or
yeah, okay. Undergrad.
Yep.
So it was the first year they opened up this Venture Challenge for business school students to undergrads, which was lucky for us because it was this very helpful course that took you through first customer discovery, which is an exercise that anyone with any idea for a business needs to do first, making sure there's someone who wants to buy your product.
So could I cut you off for 1 second there? Because you just brought up something that I think is so vital. Did you know, the significance of that before doing it, middle of doing it, or after in reflection? Where was the point where you were like, product market fit is so vital? Where was that point?
For startups in general, or for our product?
For you, yeah. I mean, like, as you come, I mean, like, I guess it's both, right? Like, you go into this and the venture challenge, and you recognize, I have an opportunity to find customer fit. And most startups, I think, they say that they're building something to solve a problem, but a lot of times they're just like, what's a way I could make money on a thing? And then they build it reverse engineered. It just seems like they solved the problem, but they actually didn't.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for us, actually, it was interesting because we were doing the customer discovery like exercises, and we were kind of questioning if we needed to do them, because like Zach and I had started with something we knew people wanted. Like day one, we're like, you know, people want healthier snacks, and then look at the egg white. It's high protein, low carb, has a crazy protein to carb ratio. Like, that's clearly going to be something.
It's been a staple for a long time as like health diet.
Exactly. And if you could put that in a place where normally, you know, chips, normally people are kind of conceptualizing that as one of the most unhealthy things that exists that they could eat. You know, if you could take an egg white omelet and take those nutritionals and put that into a chip, we just knew there was a market for it. I mean, most immediately you look at fitness and you say, okay, high protein products sell in fitness. And then we knew about this keto diet trend for the low carb. So we saw those two. We just said keto, fitness, and kind of like, we still went out and surveyed people, but we kind of knew all along, like, that, like, we already knew that we had a product market fit.
Yep.
Yeah.
So from an important standpoint, like, you knew the importance of needing that.
Yes. I mean, well, I think so. I mean, doing the exercises convinced me, and reading some of like the books they had us read convinced me, like, okay, this is an important thing for all startups to do. And like, I guess it started to get the methodology of like, when you have a question about your product, go out and ask 40 people who you want to sell it to versus just theorizing in your mind what
you think
they want.
I think empathy mapping is the thing that almost every, it's not just startups, it's businesses. That's like the number one most missed thing. Because like in the end, like, it's not even about you. Like, yes, you need to obviously have people who want to eat this, but you also need to sell it to, you know, whether it's Freshie or Whole Foods or whoever it is, you need to sell to them a value that they're going to be able to make a return on, that's going to ultimately return to you and to their customers. So if you don't know your customers, why they want it, you don't know what value prop Freshie could have putting it in front of people, you don't know anything. Like, it's very hard to build a business from that point.
Yeah. Totally.
So you accomplish that. Continue.
Yep, we accomplished that. You know, later in the course was financial projections, which is the next thing you should do. Okay.
Yeah.
People want this. Can I make it for a price where I can hand it off to a store and there's a profit margin, you know?
Yeah.
So making sure that was all aligned, which, you know, it's definitely for healthy snacks, especially when you're using egg white, it is more expensive to produce than something like Doritos.
Do you have the ability to bring the price down at like mass quantity? You're just not there? Or?
Yeah. There's, I mean, so the process gets a lot more efficient at higher quantities. When you order ingredients in huge bulk, you can get them, like in our case, directly from a giant farm versus having to go through a middleman, a distributor, to get that egg white. So that all will let us price pretty competitively, you know, within a year, year and a half. What else? Okay, so financial projections. We wrote a formal business plan. And then, of course, there was the pitch element to the class, which is, you know, it's interesting. Like, I feel like sometimes it's unfortunate that, like, pitching can be so important, especially for, like, college startups, because it's hard to get funding. And you have to go into this public setting and, like, you know, I think charisma counts too much, and, like, being salesy counts too much. Like, there could be someone with a really good idea who's really smart who isn't that good at presenting in front of a crowd, and they don't win the competition and get funded. So, like, I do think that's kind of unfortunate. But we did that. We had two kind of, like, practice pitches and then, like, a finals pitch where we won some money from the university.
Earned. You didn't win it. You earned.
Earned, exactly.
Earned some money.
And that's fun, too, because that was equity free, which is always great.
Yep.
But, yeah, so that's how it kind of – that – 10-week process got us obsessed with the business. At that point, we were, you know, I was spending probably 6 hours a day you know, in addition to classes on it. And so we kind of just steamrolled.
And you scored some early wins. So it makes you feel like, okay, so there's more to this than just what we think. And other people who've done it before are somewhat validating, not that they necessarily know, but they know more. Or I guess hypothetically they know more.
Yeah.
Are validating that you guys are in the right direction. Where I think it starts to get interesting, and to your point about the pitching thing, like, this is the pitching problem is something that, like, that's why we do the show on Saturdays and let people just call and pitch. It's a curse for at every level. There's female minority entrepreneurs that literally get zero deal flow because either, and it's not a racial female bias thing as much as people would think. It's actually just a relate. Do I relate to you? We're coming from two very different life, rich investor, person of whatever background. Do I relate to you?
Yeah.
And so one of the things we've constantly preached is like the ability to tell a story and to like let the deck speak for itself and let me just tell you the story about how I did this and how I can make it work, how it makes money, and how ultimately it'll make you money. And you get away from it if you are charismatic, which you actually are charismatic in your own way. It was something that I took your kind of side on when you were at Future Founders. Like I felt like there was a pitch that was being made by a lot of different people in different ways that I was like, all right, well, they did an awesome job. Like they did a better job than you on the actual pitch, I guess. Mm. But the product is not viable. Like it's just not. And so like to your point, I think that I guess, you're in college, so you don't have a huge history. So it's like, what else do you have to say, I guess?
Yeah.
I'm just going to pitch.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just felt like when we won the New Venture Challenge in Chicago, that was a particularly great pitch. Like me and Ben and David, who were pitching with me, we all knocked it out of the park. And the product itself sucked at that point. And we had a financial chart that made no sense. But like no one questioned the financials and no one like...
College life.
Like no one like kind of asked us hard questions. And I was like, why did that go so well? I think it's just because the pitch was a good performance and people were feeling good. And then we won. I'm like, I mean, there should be a little more rigor to this process.
Well,
of like,
can I tell you, it's the equity part. There's no equity on that one.
Yeah, that's true. That's
so
true.
Like if you start putting money in for equity or debt, I'm going to glaze over your pitch and I'm just going to be looking at the deck behind you and like, all right, so where's that happening?
It's a good point that once we started raising money, we ran into actually difficult questions and scrutiny, which you should be getting.
What's the toughest question you've had to answer? I'm just fascinated with this because I've had people in this chair that are literally twice your age and they know like a third of as much. And it's like, I'm very impressed with you.
Thank you. Toughest question we've had to answer. I mean, anything around just at the end of the day, winning, the product winning. And when people can, it's very easy to tear into your logic of how you're going to grow the company and market the product. And, you know, food and bev is a competitive space. And especially within retail, there's just only so many slots. And there's only so many good slots that are at eye level, right? Like they can put your product at the ground floor and no one's going to see it. Like, so when people really tear into that, there's no real way to promise you that it's going to succeed.
I love that. And it's a great answer.
Yeah.
It's true. Here's the truth. How do you win in this?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what you're marketing. In our case, we've got a breakthrough product. From what we've seen, you want to be... there's a huge first mover advantage. So, you know, Halo Top kind of was the first pint that just knocked you out of the park with how low calorie it was.
Yep.
So in the same vein, like there have been healthier snacks, but we want to be... kind of the healthier chip, and especially the egg white chip. We got to own that.
Yeah.
And so we would like to be first in distribution with that concept, at least in mass distribution. And I mean, from our, like, if you're looking at it from a Kraft perspective or a Kellogg perspective, there's a whole logic to staying power of brands over decades.
Yep.
In our case, I think it's just about kind of getting everywhere relatively quickly. Obviously, we want to grow somewhat steadily at the beginning, but once you've proven it out within, let's say, a Whole Foods context, then you take on Kroger, then you take on Costco, then you get into Starbucks. Like, you just keep expanding. At that point, ideally, sell the company and let some large CPG company worry about how to make it stay. That's not our task, you know?
Yeah, so that's another part of this. And I'm sure this goes to the mentorship stuff. And I know that, I don't know if I was the one who connected. You already did connect with my good friend Peter from RX Bar.
Yeah.
But, like, great case study. You know, like, this is a guy who, very similar upbringing to you, has a lot of good people around him that was able to help kind of get things squared. Beautiful branding, wonderful product, unique in that not new to the space, but new way of making it and getting it to the space, new application.
Yep.
You're very similar in that, in all of those things, except you're also a new to the space product. And you just said something that I think I don't mean to be like bowing down on this to you. I really don't. I try not to, actually. I try to go the other way on this, but you keep saying these things that trigger, I wish more people at your age and in the entrepreneur space said stuff like this. Peter, I don't know if he knew or not that he was exiting, if he was building to exit. I know that he knew what you just said, which is CPG make it their problem.
Yeah.
It's my job to discover a niche, complete it, build it, scale it. Then I'm out.
Yeah.
But how do you get yourself to a position where you can do, you know, what was it, $250,000 in revenue, then he goes 1 million, then he does 7 million, then he does 100 million?
Yeah.
And in there, one could look at that and be like, oh, flash in the pan. I don't think so. I don't think that was random at all. I think he set up a small team that could do one thing, which is to prove a product and deliver it. Another team that said we could sell it, and they sold it. Another team that said they could sell it and deliver it, and people would do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then they filled in the gaps when they went to the next level. Like, how do you look at this? How do you build it?
I don't think we have all the answers yet, but probably something similar to that evolution. I mean, in the next, through 2019, it's really about getting larger distribution. Let's say in a couple regions like the Midwest and like the LA market, New York market, making sure the product sells in, I don't know, 50 to 100 locations in each spot, and then saying, okay, like, we think we have something that's replicable kind of everywhere across the country. Then it would be about making, you know, good sales hires and making sure we get into those channels. And it to me, it seems like you want to just get something that works in, get your product selling very well, get a good velocity in the stores you're in. Once you crack that code, you just get that out everywhere. But you don't want to neglect, and the advice I've been given is you don't want to neglect your first 100 or 200 stores because you want to add 1,000 in your first year. Like, make sure you're doing a great job in your Chicago stores, your LA stores, your New York stores, in those small kind of more market tests. Once you have something going that's sustainable, where you don't have to, let's say, pay for someone to demo it every week, but the product just kind of moves on its own. Maybe it takes the occasional demo, but you want to get something that you can just scale very easily. And I think that that's where Halo Top and RxBar, they kind of did that with their package. Like, the package markets the product so well.
3 dates, 2 nuts, no BS.
People just immediately get why they're buying it. And so I'm hoping we're at that point with our packaging. But, and we learned a lot in the last 5 months about how to just immediately call out the right things. We changed the packaging a bit. I don't know if you've seen the new one, I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more learnings like that, or maybe we are at a place, you know, we'll see, where the product
probably
is selling.
Always evolve in some capacity, but
yeah. But I think there's certainly, like, for every product, there's probably just an inflection point of where, okay, now I'm communicating my product as well as it can be communicated with this design. And once you're there, and once you've improved, I guess, the product itself, the taste, at that point, it's like either it'll explode or it won't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So I want to ask you the $600 million question.
Uh-huh.
You can get the reference there, but
yep.
RxBar and others like it. I mean, even Pat Vitalik with Home Chef.
Yeah.
The branding and what they built are very hard to expand product line. So RxBar is doing that with, like, peanut butter and, like, different kind of things, but it's still, like, it's RxBar. Like, it's 3 dates, 2 nuts, no BS. Like, that's simple. You just walking around with an egg.
Yeah.
You've got a brand that potentially could enter other lines of business.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're not going to be making the mistake of losing focus and moving into other things now. That's not important.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, I think, interesting from a valuation standpoint when I look at how your company goes, and I think, you're not necessarily a one-trick pony. If this takes off and you've got egg chips, there's no reason that there are not other things that you guys get involved in. Quick eggs could be any number of SKUs of types of food. and you're set up for anything egg-based, basically. So the innovation R&D engine for you is significantly bigger, I think, than these other ones, and more dangerous because skews can equal trouble,
yes,
on, you know, and unbalanced. But I think that potentially there's a not go straight to a CPG out.
Yeah, that's true. No, I mean, I think that's kind of what Simple Mills is doing. It's like they're building it much larger. I mean, maybe they'll never sell.
Well, that's the question. You know, I mean, some companies are, like, we talk about this all the time at our own office. Like, it's, do you go public? Is that make sense? Do you sell to a larger company that is or is not public? Do you print money and there's no need?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's an unknown. You do have, of course, the challenge with food just in general, that there are fads and that there's, like, the market ebbs and flows and you're, you know, high quality product. So it's like pricing is different and enough headaches that it might be worth an exit at some point if the number's right.
Mm.
But I do think what's really cool about the way you've done this is you basically just took that little egg logo and just planted it and said, we're going to be in this space. And chips is our first entry point, maybe our last, but maybe not.
Yeah. No, that is exciting that there's a whole, I mean, we have ideas for our future lines, you know, all with an egg base, higher protein options than the comparable, you know, whatever category it's in.
Yeah.
So that is nice that it's a great jumping off point. And something we just did to our packaging was we had the phrase egg white chips on it, and we took that off, and it just says Quavos. So, because we didn't want people, you know, seeing it and going egg white chips, but, you know, without an attachment to brand.
Yep.
So,
I think that's a good decision.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's very important to brand Quavos as, like, it's like Kleenex.
Yeah, exactly.
Egg white chips are Quavos. That's what they're called.
Totally.
Smart. You're a smart kid, my friend.
Thank you.
I don't know if you're ever going to go back to college or if there's even a point to it, but
hopefully not. The goal is to not go back.
The number of people who come on here and say things like that, and I laugh because it's like, why? What's the point of going back? Like, you can learn everything at the school online anyway. Anyway, that's a whole other, that's a different podcast. Where do people go to learn more about this? Where can they go now to try them and to order them?
Yeah. So Quavos.com is the best source, you know, if you're scattered around the country. In Chicago, we're going to be launching in a bunch of different channels throughout the summer. So we've got a presence in a couple Freshies right now, but going to be expanding to Life Kitchen, Limitless Coffee.
Matt Matros, he's at it again.
Yes. Where else?
Can you get that Freshie at 300 North LaSalle?
Yes. Yeah. We were in there. We have to restock, but...
Restock.
In 3 weeks.
All right, because that's my office, so I'd like to go down there and just get myself some Quavos.
Yeah, totally. And then as I said, next week, Thursday, April 4th, launching on Kickstarter, which will be a way to get pretty good discounts. And if you want to buy, I think 150 bags is the biggest pack. If you want a lot of them, that will be the cheapest you'll ever get them.
I got a new baby on the way, so I might as well.
There you go.
It's all good. All right, Nick, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
Of course, you can learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities. Check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.